everybody. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker. Welcome to our August edition of Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success. This month, we're talking about unplugging. I'm very excited about our call today. Welcome and thank you for spending a little bit of time with me today. Just a reminder, you know, I begin each call with this. All of our calls are recorded, and we are available on a private page on my site for you to listen to. And you can also invest in a 12-pack, and you get the entire year's worth of recordings, this entire year-long program on dialing down the drama. It's inexpensive and a pretty easy way to get what I am quite sure will be a dose of inspiration and wisdom for you to help you as we navigate this honorable and noble profession. It's kind of funny, this call, because I make our calls audio only, and I do that because I want you to be able to walk or to not have that screen in front of you. And as I prepared for this call, I have even more reasons to want to look at the audio only kind of format. And this is kind of a sneak peek into something coming up in the future with me, but launching in 2018, I will be doing a podcast instead of these calls. And I think you're going to find that to be real exciting, real helpful, shorter segments, and hopefully serve you better. But more on that later. If you're a Success Club member, I want to thank you for investing in your own personal and professional growth. If you're a guest on today's call, welcome. And I'd like you to consider joining us for each month and gaining new tools and insights. If you ever have trouble, send a note to info@marcyheim.com and someone will get back in touch with you. Just a couple of fun things that are coming up for me is my book is being translated into Spanish. I hope we've run into a few hiccups. And I'll be keynoting the conference for AFP Mexico in Mexico City on September 8th. Very, very excited about that. I also want to tell you all that if you have not yet considered joining me for more major gifts in Chicago, it's two incredible days in a small group, generally around 10 folks, and we get together in a nice hotel, but not extravagant hotel. I think it's $139 a night in Chicago, right by the airport, so you can easily fly in, and we look at everything involved in raising more major gifts. Ending with my wonderful relationship action plan. It's a host of worksheets that take you through the 2 days. The fee is $479 until tomorrow, and then it goes up. So please consider jump online at www.marcyheim.com/ more major gifts, or just look for it in the tabs there. I would love to have you with me. And our next call is coming up on September 19th, and there I'll be looking at dialing down the drama and the role that gratitude plays in drama in our lives. So be sure to mark your calendars now, September 19th, and join me next month. Okay, so now for the next 60 minutes or so, I want you to stop, slow down, breathe, focus. Phones down. Try to do one thing at a time, email off, and just be with me. Just be with me. You deserve a break. This program's part of a year-long special. I call it Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success in raising money and in life. Drama down, dollars up. Drama down, happiness up. We spend precious time and energy engaged in emotions, my friends, that don't serve us. In fact, you know this to be true. We'll have these interactions that leave us feeling drained. Ugh. How many times have we wasted precious moments lamenting about what might happen? There's the key. What might happen if that major gift doesn't come in, if we don't get a raise? What if we get fired? What if our spouse gets fired? How many times, be truthful here, did we put off dealing with some issue and then finally we deal with it and we say, gee, that wasn't so bad. I just had that getting my book ready to be translated into Spanish. I put it off for a number of days and I may have jeopardized the whole project getting done just because I thought it was going to be such a big project and in the end it just wasn't. Ugh, why did I make such a big deal out of this? Do you ever look back at a day, and I had this happen, I was just at Teal College outside of Pittsburgh, and one of the participants in there talked about a day when her boss said to her as she walked by, name, and I'm not going to share her name, you know, you look really crabby today. Now, you can debate whether or not that was appropriate for her boss to say, but my point to you is she said, it ruined my day. I looked back at her and I thought, no, I'm not crabby. And all day she festered on this. Well, you know, she gave up a whole day for this mood and, in fact, brought it to the conference, so it was still going on for her. So I want you to see a dial. And I know dials are fewer and fewer out there, but whether it's the volume dial on the radio, whether in the car, whether it's a dial on your crock pot, low, medium, high, I want you to see a dial, and I want you to see yourself physically reaching towards that dial with your hands and turning it up and turning it down, whatever, crank that thing. And take a minute and see yourself controlling the dial. I created this program to help you become aware of what cranks your dial. When do you read an email and swoop, up it goes? Or what person walks into your space? Or what situation happens at work or home that, there goes that dial, up. And I want you to see yourself and the inner game going on and crank that dial down. You control it. Be aware of what you're thinking. Be aware of your inner game, because those thoughts lead to our feelings. Our feelings lead to our beliefs about a situation, true or false, has nothing to do with it. And those beliefs lead us to the actions we take. Your thoughts create your actions, and our actions lead to our results. So today, I want to specifically focus in on becoming more aware of unplugging. Now, you might feel this is all around your life, or maybe it's not something you think about much at all. But who among us hasn't struggled to ignore that ding of the email or that Facebook post coming up at the bottom of our screen and the fact that we're always in front of a screen, a Snapchat coming our way on the phone, or the desire to play just one more game? One more time, just one more quick game. Today I want to explore how these digital tools may be taking over our relationships, and more importantly than that, our health, my friends. There's some exciting new research, or maybe not so exciting with the results, and I want to talk about this, and then I want to leave you with 12 steps, or 12 actions, or 12 thoughts that I would like you to consider as you move forward in our digital plugged world. And ironically, real life gives me something to share on this call. It amazes me as I prepare for these programs how my real life will take a turn, almost as if I need to have this experience before I'm going to be with you all. So just a few weeks back, it happened. I dropped my phone on a drive to Valparaiso, Indiana, to speak at a large gathering of YMCAs, and it wouldn't charge. As the charge was slowly going down, 50%, 38%, 19%, I tried to look ahead for my next turns and write them down. I didn't quite make it before the phone died. And much of this time, I was navigating through horrific Chicago traffic. So it wasn't like I could just stop and look at my phone. I couldn't even get a place to get off. So here I am, no phone, no map, no email, no texts, No way to tell my kind hosts I was going to probably be going over an hour late. What to do? Finally, when I was literally within the last 10 minutes of my journey, I had to pull over to a McDonald's, talk to a wonderful elderly gentleman who was sitting there with his computer, and ask him if he could help me find Valparaiso from where I was. I was so lost without my phone. He helped me, and this story has a happy ending. I got there. My hosts were waiting at the restaurant, and we had a wonderful program. And it was just so weird to not have a phone during this whole time, be able to text back to my husband and say, hey, I made it, to borrow somebody else's, to just let him know. And then there were funny moments. So my host kindly printed out a map for me with written directions on how to get my way back home. He said to me, now, if you have any problems along the way with this, Marcy, just call. Right, on the same phone that can't give me directions, remember? You know, I don't have a phone. And I didn't have a phone for 5 days. This was a perfect experience for me to prepare for this talk. Perfect experience. So I have a question for you. Are you a user? Are you a user? Now, remember, I experienced the world in fundraising before online was mainstream, in fundraising and in life. You know I always talk about the words we use. Well, even in the very beginning, in 1983, when I began my work with the university, I worked on a Wang computer. Anyone remember these? And we were called a user. Now think about that. What do we most commonly associate with being a user? Yep, drugs. And it's more and more prevalent. And honestly, as I researched for this talk today, the addiction and the potential devastation from being a user, where we're out of control about our use, it's not all that far apart. Now, I understand that might be a kind of dramatic statement in a program about dialing down the drama, but just like our overall thinking impacts our lives, we become what we think about. The biggest piece of managing this is to be aware of what we are thinking about, managing our thoughts. Our social media usage needs to be managed. We need to be aware. I want to start from that place. It's constantly evolving, and all of those major platforms out there are offering new tools and features. Why? To attract us, to keep us hooked, to keep us using, right? To get a new fix. It keeps us all spending time on it. In fact, the amount of time people spend on social media is constantly going up. I'm sure that's not a new piece of information for you. I'm sure your own world is impacted. Teens spend a staggering 9 hours a day using social media. Some teens check their social media accounts 100 times a day. Some of your colleagues do, right? It's not just teens. A report from earlier this year noted that 70% of all U.S. adults are now social media users, often making social media a core part of their daily routine. I do. I get it. I get this. And certainly now I'm running this program from a computer, and I'm talking to you from a cell phone. It's understandable why social media has become this integral part in our lives. We get our weather. We connect with our colleagues. We connect with our kids. It's where we figure out what time the soccer game starts. But here's my question for you. Are we truly connecting? Has this gotten a little blurred in what's information sharing and what's connecting and what's the quality of those connections? And what's the impact of all of this on our health and well-being? It's these things that I want to talk to you about. Are we overdosing on our advices? Does all this liking, following, commenting mean we're truly connecting? Now, you know I'm a scientist by training, and I love research. And we have examined our social connections for years. This is not a new thing. We have looked at what's wrong with folks and when do people struggle or have problems getting along in the workplace, working well with their donors, being a good player in school, doing well in school, doing well in office settings, on it goes. And it's sort of common sense that social connection is a healthy and necessary part of our existence. There have been all sorts of studies that have examined the benefits of social ties. And sure, they find that people with strong social connections have lower levels of anxiety and depression, a stronger immune system, faster recovery times from illness, and even increased longevity. And on the flip side, there are also studies that show that a lack of social connection is correlated with lower self-esteem, lower empathy for others, listen to me now, vulnerability to disease, higher blood pressure, and increased depression. Okay, but here's the question we've got to ask. Where does social media and social use for connections, where does that fit into our overall social connection? How does social media relate to a social connection in the traditional sense that led to these positive results? That's the core of this. And I can tell you one thing for sure. This is what we already know. For good or bad, we are constantly comparing ourselves, my friends, and comparison kills us. Comparison is such a negative in our life. You know, ooh, what is so-and-so doing now and offering programs? And I get into that for a while. Or, gee, what's so-and-so doing on social media? Are we doing that in our nonprofit? We're constantly comparing ourselves. And are we as pretty, as smart, as successful, as happy, as loved, as rich? How do we measure up? We have metrics, dashboards, meeting our numbers. You know, it's out there. Are we doing what the next guy is doing? What are best practices, right? What are best practices? And we can make ourselves crazy with this. And while accountability is good, and we need to be striving to meet some goals, setting goals is the difference between success or failure in life. It helps us determine what we're thinking about, and we become what we think about. But social media takes us to a new place, many places, in fact. There have been a number of studies that have examined the consequences of what we're talking about now, and listen to me, there's social connection versus social comparison. I want you to write that down. I want you to hear that. There's a huge difference between social connection and social comparison. One moment you're innocently looking at what the cousins are doing or what your friends are up to, and the next minute you're in a four-month deep look at the vacations they've taken, the stuff they're doing as a family, the things they're doing with their nonprofits, and you are wondering why you haven't gone anywhere in years, why you don't have that kind of time with your family, or why your nonprofit isn't doing this too. Woza. It's one big social comparison. A study out of the UK surveyed 1,500 Facebook and Twitter users, finding that 62% of the group reported feeling inadequate and 60% reported feelings of jealousy from comparing themselves to other users. I don't know that we need the numbers. We know it inside ourselves, don't we? Now, you know, I've seen some pretty ugly pictures posted on Facebook, and there's some of me out there that, thanks, friends. but I know that we all try our darndest to look great. There are times I'm taking pictures with sunglasses on because I've traveled so much and I look tired and I don't want that out there. I don't feel bad, but I might look tired. we are striving to create that perfect picture life on social media, only posting what we want other people to see. We know that. But now listen up, listen here. But as we look at other people and we know that they're doing the same thing, they're giving you the picture that they want you to see, we are still holding ourselves up to that perfect picture they're putting out. We are still comparing ourselves to that perfect picture they're putting out. Not the reality of their life, the picture they're painting, even though we know they're tweaking that picture. Are you with me? And now there's some people that still maintain only people with lower self-esteem will be negatively impacted by social comparison. Well, okay. But my friends, we all have our moments where our self-esteem needs some support and boosting. I think this impacts us all. And certainly I have found that social media helps me stay in touch with some people that I've never been able to stay in touch with as well. Some of my high school friends, some of my colleagues that I don't have a lot of time to connect with. It's a way for me to have a little bit of a link out there. I get that. It's also a way to connect effectively with our major givers who really are heavily social users. There's that word again, users. And it's a way that we can make our relationships work with our major donors that are heavily into social media. I get that. There's some pushback on this. But what do we already know about not only the impact on social comparison, but on our health and about the quality of our connections? Let's explore that a little bit more, okay? The research tells us, my friends, and here's where I'm going to be just Marcy to you. The research tells us that social media is messing with us. It's messing with us. We sit and we stare at it. There are new syndromes related to neck and back pain from curling up next to that screen. We are finding new uses for chiropractors and all kinds of things related to new aches and pains that were never there before. Sitting has been described as the new smoking, meaning that just like smoking can kill us, too much sitting can kill us in front of a computer, in our car, texting away, everywhere we are, stuck with that device. These are just a quick list of the issues. So it perpetuates or encourages us to sit still more than we would otherwise do. It increases our internet addiction. We'll stay up all night stuck on something, right? We will get on something. We'll miss a deadline to chat or to connect. We'll be late for a meeting to finish one of these social contacts, right? I mean, we will display bad behavior for the sake of being online. It hinders our face-to-face solicitation skills and socialization skills. It leads us to having fewer in-person internet interactions with others. Let me say that again. It's been proven to lead us to having fewer in-person interactions. I'm going to talk more about some of these, but I just wanted to give you this list. It also is the cause of now a new thing called social media anxiety disorder. Really? We've got a disorder. The other thing is, just like you can sit with a bag of chips and then the bag is empty and you say to yourself, huh, did I just eat this whole bag of chips? We can have a mindless kind of consumption on this. We can find ourselves scrolling away and we're not even really taking it in. We're just kind of, just like the bag of chips. 2 hours have passed, and what did we really see? Mindless consumption. They call it tech neck. They call it eye strain. There's research from Harvard that says that we have a decreased attention span. That's not the Harvard study. Online measures indicate our span has dropped from 12 seconds to 7 seconds. The Harvard study was we have a loss of our ability to focus and remember. This one's really scary for me because there are a lot of things. We keep joking with each other. Boy, I think I'm getting Alzheimer's. It's not funny to start with, and we should probably watch this because we become what we think about and what we focus on manifests in our lives. So please let us not manifest Alzheimer's to us. Let's not do that. But according to a Harvard study by researcher Daniel Wagner, the use of devices is increasing, is responsible for a loss of our ability to focus and remember. That's the root cause. And finally, and I want to spend a little more time on this one, sleep. So many of you talk to me about being overwhelmed and being tired all the time, And here's where this stuff can kill us. 71% of people sleep either holding their smartphone, having it in bed with them, or having it on their nightstand. Now listen to me, 70%, you know, you're probably there. My phone's in my room, I'll admit it, I'm in this group with you. Now I don't go to sleep holding it, but it's with me there. So many of us, I kind of use mine as my alarm clock. But when your cell phone is close to you, a couple of things happen. First, there's the physical temptation of it to just check that email one more time or jump onto a social site or look at that work email one more time or scan the headlines. And often that's keeping us awake beyond when we are tired and need to go to sleep. As a result, it gets us kind of awake and working instead of, or functioning, instead of using that before time sleep to chillax and get into that mode for sleep. So it physically takes our time when we should be relaxing and sleeping. There's a study that talks about people who consume electronic media, is how they describe it, in bed. People who consume electronic media in bed are at higher risk for insomnia. Now, maybe some of you are out there saying, Marcy, I know this. Well, maybe you've heard all this before. But again, as I prepared for this call today, I was struck by the powerful role this plays in our life and has on our health and happiness. And sleep is a big reason. But the time we're on it is not the only reason. The other piece of this that's getting more and better documented is laptops, tablets, televisions emit something called blue light. And it's a type of light that our brain incorporates with sunlight. And we have these rhythms during our day. Our body is naturally on a rhythm. It's why we get so screwed up when we travel and we change time zones. And I know this. Well, even an hour messes with us, right? Even an hour time zone change messes with us because we've got this internal rhythm. Now our body's supposed to be awake and functioning. Now our body's supposed to be sleeping. It's actually called a circadian rhythm. But this blue light actually suppresses the production of melatonin. Now, you know that melatonin is a drug. It's a natural occurring compound that you can buy and take to help you sleep. Well, we're not producing enough melatonin because we're wound up before we go to bed instead of doing that chillax mode. And this blue light actually is suppressing melatonin, and it's also literally stimulating our brain. It's making our brain think we're seeing the sun. And it's daytime. Oh, wake up. Time to be working. Yep, sunshine. Yep, this is your on mode when we're trying to go to sleep. My friends, this is a real problem. This is a real problem, a real problem. So get rid of that screen 2 hours before you go to bed. Get rid of all screens 2 hours before you go to bed. There was a huge study done with people who read a hard book, you know, those things that they can be soft-covered, hard-covered, but those things that actually have words written on them, you open up and read from them, and versus reading on a Kindle or some kind of electronic device. So there was a study just focusing on electronic reading books versus hard-covered books. So they were both looking at social reading. So this isn't searching or texting or anything like that. This is reading. This is supposed to be, you know, that relaxing reading many of us like to do before we go to sleep. Okay. And, excuse me, and both at the groups that were reading on electronic devices had shorter periods of that REM sleep, that deep sleep that's so important. They felt tired the next day and they woke up more frequently. Both groups slept for 8 hours. They were physically in bed for 8 hours. But the group that was on the electronic stuff woke up feeling tired and didn't have, when they measured their brain waves, they didn't have that deep sleep that we need. We know we need that deep sleep. So they reversed the group, same things happened. So it wasn't just like one group was different. It happened the same time. So very, very important that we get that rest that impacts everything in our lives. Okay. Now I want to talk to you about social media or social devices and your overall well-being. There was another study that talked about use of devices doing more harm than good for us overall. This study looked at over 5,000 adults from across the country to see how their mental and physical health changed over the course of 2 years. So this was a longer study. And the metrics included life satisfaction, self-reported mental health, self-reported, now hear me, self-reported, so how I feel mentally, how I feel physically, and my body mass index. So what's kind of my fat ratio? Their metrics used Facebook's, including liking posts, creating posts, clicking on links, and the researchers also had measures of the participants' real-world social networks. So face-to-face social networks were also part of this study. Okay. It's unique in that it used three sets of data over 2 years. It was technical reporting and participant reporting, as well as face-to-face networks. Very in-depth study. And what they found, my friends, was astonishing. Where face-to-face social interactions were positively correlated with overall well-being, Facebook and technology activity was negatively associated. The results were especially telling when it came to mental health. We found consistently that both liking others' contents and clicking links significantly predicted a subsequent reduction in self-reported physical health, mental health, and life satisfaction, said the authors of the study, Holly Shakya and Nicholas Christakis. So here's my takeaway from all of this. And I'm not trying to bore you with these research findings. What I'm trying to do is substantiate that I'm not just flapping here this morning. I took some time to dig into what's out there, what's known. Because we can all say, well, my sense of it is, or do we even stop to think about our sense of it is? But in short, social media is not a substitute for real-world face-to-face interactions with others. It's not just the screen time that impacts our well-being, but listen to me now. The fact that we are replacing meaningful in-person social interaction with social media. We're replacing it. With the average device user spending nearly an hour every day on a site, and many of us checking social media apps almost immediately after we wake up in the morning, it's time that we start assessing the influence social media is having in our lives. Now, I want you to do this not just because of your fundraising success and the fact that it's letting your jobs jump into your personal space. You're on 24/7. You're looking at work email 24/7. You're looking at email when you go to bed. You're looking at email when you wake up. You're looking at email when you're at a family wedding. Come on now. but it's also for your personal satisfaction and your personal health. It's leading to us feeling anxious and depressed. It's hurting us in ways that we may not actively realize. By becoming more aware of its impact, we can begin to take more positive and proactive measures that allow us to be in more control of our health and our well-being. Okay? So let's get into what to do. I have 12 actions for you to consider. 12 actions. Number one, and here's where I always start. You have to define what the problem is. You have to know what the problem is. That is your personal deal. So number one is understand your usage. Right now you're in it. I don't think I could tell you how much time I'm on my phone or texting or on the computer in a day. I'm just doing it. I don't know that I've actively tracked it. I have tracked some things. How much of my time do I spend on email? And I've grouped my email for three specific times in the day, and I don't look at it all the time. And I've turned off that irritating box that jumps up and does this. But I also have not consciously said, how much time in a day am I in front of a screen? That's really the question I want you to ask yourself. So number one, understand, know your usage. Time how long you're on any screen, TV, phone, computer, laptop, notebook, any game, handheld game, any time you are in front of a screen, time it in a day. First, be real with yourself. Be brutally honest with yourself and decide if you need to do things differently. Decide if you're okay with what's going on there. And start creating times you're totally unplugged. Calm your mind. Start with 10 minutes. 10 minutes of time where you literally turn off everything and sit in a quiet space. Some of us call it meditating. You know, I call it just unplugging and being with yourself and enjoying that. But get to a point where at least there's a half day, all of Sunday morning, all of an evening that you're out that you can just be away from it. If you're swimming, for God's sake, you know, now we can get phones that can handle the water. Ushta. So understand your usage and make a decision about it and start creating times when you're totally unplugged. Number two. Understand your personal draw into your devices. Number two, understand your personal draw into your devices. Here's another place, my friends, where you are kidding yourself. And I'm challenging you on this. There are people that tell me, oh, Marcy, you know, they have their phones with them and they're glancing to them, but they're trying to get me to think that they're really listening to me. I will stop and say, when you're done with your text, I'll continue. Not only, in my way of thinking, is it rude, but you are kidding yourselves if you think you can be doing something on your phone and not be distracted from what you're doing. Do you sit at a table and all look at your phones? Are online relationships replacing your face-to-face relationships in your life? What is your personal draw? Are you spending less time with people and more time online communicating with people? Do you know how it feels to be totally present with another person? Awareness is your first step to any change. So number two, understand your personal draw into your devices. How much of a user are you? How addicted are you? How much do you? They're right there. Bing, bing, boom, boom, gotcha. Understand your personal draw. Number three, stop doing two things at once. If you still believe you can multitask, you're wrong. You can't multitask and give each task 100% of your attention. Now, if you're talking on the phone and peeling potatoes, Yeah, you can do two things at once. I get that. I get that. But you cannot do two things at once that are involving your mind and attention. So if you are answering your email while you're talking to a donor on the phone and think they don't know you're doing under something else, you are kidding yourselves, my friends. They know it, they feel it, and they are hurt by it. Don't do it. Now, there are times that I'm in a coaching call and I say to my clients, I'm taking some electronic notes here. So if you hear the clicking or, you know, I'm putting some things down so that I remember what we're talking about, because my clients expect me to help them with their major donor work and I've got to remember what we're talking about. So I take some electronic notes and I let them know I'm doing that. But I am not trying to sneak something while I'm talking to somebody else. Not trying to sneak. So number three, stop doing two things at once. Number four, turn off your computer and go for a walk. Brief and several times during the day, move. Or I just saw an ad. It's called Flight Bike. FlyteBike. You can pedal at your desk while you're working. This whole idea of sitting is the new smoking, you know, turn off the screen and get up and go for a brief walk. Get away from your screen for a brief period of time. Turn it off, go away. Turn it off, go away. Number four, turn off your computer and go for a walk. When you are at your computer, stand up. Number five, stand up at the computer. I have all around a new workstation now that lets me stand up when I'm at my computer. Stand up. Sitting is the new smoking. The average American sits 9.3 hours every day. Yep, 9.3 hours. You sit longer than most of us sleep. Did you hear that? You sit longer than most of us sleep, and it's literally killing us. People who sit for long hours each day have shortened life expectancies. We're fat. Come on now. We get heart disease. We have diabetes. We have cancer. I mean, it's linked to all of these things. Being on our butts. Stand up in front of your computer. Stand up in front of your computer. Stand up when you're in a conversation. Stand up in the bar. You know, don't fret that people stand up in a reception. So number five, stand up at the computer or stand up more, period. Number six, have fixed work and stop modes. So I want you to actually, those times you are in the office, I get that we put in some long days. They shouldn't be consistent, but that there are times when we burn the oil, burn the midnight oil, right? Which right away is already, we're burning ourselves up there. We put in some long days, but these days are better when we are on a schedule. And it's been proven that being on a schedule, and this goes way, way, way back, back in time, hasn't changed, but when we have focused productive times and focused breaks. So set a timer. You know I'm all around a timer. Buy a cheap egg timer at Bed Bath & Beyond. They're $9 or $9.95, I think. $9. Get a timer. Plus that ticking noise. That ticking noise actually helps you stay focused. Now is my work ticking noise. Tick, 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 tick. Some people say it makes them crazy. Hang with it for a while because you will find that ticking noise will pull your mind off of a lot of the other distractions in your workspace. If you're in an open cube, if, you know, it goes on outside your window, somebody's yakking down the hall, tick, 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 tick. It's kind of that white noise that sort of pulls you in. So have these fixed times. You have to find your optimal time, but the research tells us it's between 45 and 90 minutes, no more than 90 minutes. So set that timer for no more than 90 minutes that you're going to focus on this particular task. When that timer goes off, get your butt out of your chair. Stand up, stretch, walk, turn, sing, pray, celebrate, do a happy dance. I don't care what, but for 15 minutes, do something else. Repeat. Okay? Fix up your days like that. Number seven. I am so thrilled that this is becoming all the rage. Number seven is coloring, or frankly, just a pen will do it. We're not even teaching our kids cursive in school anymore. I'll be interested to see how this manifests over time, because all of the new brain research tells us that a different thing happens when we write, when we use our hand with our brain and the synapses we make in our brain. A different thing happens when we write or when we color. It takes us to even a different spot. And there are all kinds of programs out there about coloring and what coloring does for our mental health. So write it instead of type it. Keep something routinely that you do with a pen and paper, a journal, a list. Use a mind map to consider a problem. I'll send this out when I send out the audio for this call, a mind map. I use them all the time. But even if the last thing you do before you go to bed is write with a pen, I am grateful for, you know, the fact that I'm in bed, I can go to sleep, my family, my work, my opportunity to compose a good world, the fact that it rained today and I didn't have to water the plants, whatever. But write a gratitude list, but write it last thing before you go to bed. Write it. So number 7, color or just a pen, but write. 8, keep that darn phone out of your bed. Keep that darn phone out of your bed. Third time is a charm. Keep that darn phone out of your bed. You know, put it in the other room and charge it. Do something with it. Buy an alarm clock. They're even cheaper at Bed Bath & Beyond, $4.99. You can get an old-fashioned crank one. Buy an alarm clock. Don't use your phone. Turn off that TV, everything, 2 hours before you go to bed. I mentioned this earlier. I'm repeating it. Read a real book. Write in a journal. Our sleep is one of the key factors underlying our entire health and happiness in life. Not enough sleep leads to so many other stuff, so many other things. Our poor interpersonal relationships, we're tired, we're crabby. Remember I said the two most important questions before we make any big decision, am I tired, am I hungry? You know, really? Yeah, those basic things that so impact our optimal performance. As much as possible, choose settings that are not blue light on your phone and your computer. So I broke my phone, right? So I have a brand new S8 Samsung. There's a setting on it where I can turn that blue light off. Turn that blue light off. On my desktop computer screen, I can turn the blue light off. First they said turn it down when it gets to be at night. And I sat there and I thought, "Huh. I wonder what happens if I turn it down all day long." I find that I'm not as schizoid, you know, whoop, whoop. I think you're getting electrical charges from your screen. Find that non-blue light setting on your devices and use it. So number 8, keep the darn phone out of your bed. Number 9, read a real book. I've referred to this in the other ones. You know, spend a few bucks and buy yourself a book. I've got a whole reading list. If you could see my office, I have floor-to-ceiling bookshelves. And I'm just reading now The Go-Giver, great book, The Go-Giver. I absolutely love it. I'm also reading, that one's in the other room. It's called I'll send it out in my follow-up, but I'm reading another, I've got about 6 books going on at once. I've got some by my bed, always one in my purse, always one in my suitcase, always a few sitting around my office. I read them all at once. Read a book. Share the books you're reading. Talk to people with others. And let me tell you a big deal. If you're a major gift officer and you're traveling to see people, if they're not in your town and you get on a plane, there's this scramble now in the gate. There's a tension in the gate. Airports are slowly remodeling. Airplanes are slowly remodeling. But, my God, can I find an outlet? I got to have an outlet. Talk about drama. I need an outlet. Who's got the outlets? They're sitting by the outlets and they're not even using it. Can you move so I can have the outlet, please? I mean, this is a scene that, you know what, a book just eliminates. You sit down anywhere you want, you open your book, and you read. And you get so much more time out of that time you're in an airport because you're not waiting for everything to boot up, figuring out how to log on to the airport Wi-Fi, then jump into your whatever it is. Well, by the time you do all that, they're starting to board. And you could have read three chapters. Read a book. Read a book. Number 10, don't use your kids, your coworkers, your donors as an excuse. Don't use your kids, your donors, your coworkers, your boss, your spouse as an excuse. I have some of my clients, and frankly, this interferes with our relationship to be as successful working together as we could be, that cannot leave those phones alone. They tell me their kids have special needs. Really? Really? Is that how you want to categorize your child? And they have to be constantly in touch with their kids throughout the day. They have to be in touch with their teachers. Their spouse expects them to check in. Really? Are we tethered to them? Is that healthy? Or our donors expect that instant reaction. Marcy, you don't know my donor. He expects me to, you don't know my faculty. You don't know the rest of my colleagues. You know, they expect that turnaround. I don't believe you. I don't believe you, people. I think that you have set those expectations up for yourself. And when I've gotten the whole gang together, ED included, and said, what is the email policy at this place? It's, oh, well, you know, during the day, we'd like people to perhaps, you know, get to their email within an hour or two. But after 5, the next day is fine. Within 24 hours for most of it. We shouldn't be in that crisis mode to work with. Get clarity on that. Do not set yourself up to be 24/7 available. And don't use your kids and your coworkers as an excuse for your addiction. Yes, you're a user. Remember, I create my life, and we need to take responsibility for our lives. And just think of this. Perhaps if you weren't always Johnny on the spot to try to fix everything for everybody, they might just solve something all on their own. And what a gift that would be to our kids or our coworkers or our colleagues. You just might be able to do this yourself. What a concept. Number 11, be selfish. Yes, this is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker, generosity expert, telling you to be selfish. Yes, I want you to think about yourself. Every time you're sucked into this, you are giving away this moment you will never get back. Every time you react to an email or a tweet or a whatever, you are letting someone else dictate how you will spend your time. Someone else is dictating how you're going to spend your time. That's okay. Just be aware of it. Okay, I'm on my phone. I'm answering an email. Now I am giving my time to Sophie. Now I am giving my time to Bill. If every time you got on one of these devices, you said, now I am giving this piece of my 24 hours to this. Maybe it's a survey. Maybe it's Kohl's is now down 25%. You are giving away your time. Just be sure you're controlling that. Just be sure you're selfish with your time. Who's managing your thinking? Remember, we become what we think about. So who's planning the thoughts in your head? Are you reacting to a news feed and somebody else has just changed that thinking? Okay? And finally, number 12, think about others. So sure, be selfish, but think about selfish, but think about others. Are you giving away authentic sharing? Do you even know what that is anymore? Again, the studies show we're replacing, my friends, replacing face-to-face time with online time. Look at your own life. Measure it. Don't listen to me. Don't believe me. Measure it. What does your life look like? Our major giving work, blah, blah, blah. Every place you go, major giving work. It's all about relationships. It's all about storytelling that lead to authentic relationships, blah, 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 blah. How many times do we have to hear it? Our life and our joy and happiness is all about the quality of our personal relationships. Jack Canfield said that 40 years ago. Marcy Shymoff said that 30 years ago. check in with how you're feeling in your relationships. Check in. Are you present? Are you there? Friends, I want to tell you this, and I want you to hear it. If your summer is going fast, if it's speeding by, you're not in the moment. You're not living it. Yes, it's August, but boy, I had an amazing June and July, and I can tell you I was there, and I was present, and every place I was there 100%. So I lived those days. I remember living those days. I was there when I lived those days. Don't be in one space, but you're texting in another. Then you're not really there. And boy, is the week going fast. Turns into boy, is the month going fast. Goes into gee, is the summer going fast. Turns into gee, is my life going fast. Turns into where did it go? I don't want that for you. Be present. I want to close with the last 4 minutes that I've got with a quiz. This quiz you can just listen and do right here on our call with us. This is from Beth Kanter, K-A-N-T-E-R. I'd encourage you to go to her website, Beth Kanter. She has a new book on and spends a lot of time on social media stuff and also how this social media impacts our health. Great gal. So here is Beth's, what's your tech wellness score? So all you've got to do is listen to these sentences and say yes or no, and just keep track of the yeses. Just hold your little fingers up and keep track of the yeses. There are 10 questions, and you've got 10 fingers, so if you said yes to them all your fingers will be up. Is the only time you take a break from your tech when you're sleeping? Yes or no? Is the only time you take a break from your tech when you're sleeping? Number two, do you check your phone before you go to bed or right when you wake up? Yes or no? Be honest here. Do you check your phone before you go to bed and right when you wake up? Yes or no? Do you have problems recalling information and resort to searching online or in your notes because you can't remember? Yes or no? Number four, do you feel that you often have a hard time paying attention or focusing on a single task? Are you kind of jittery if you're not multitasking, right? Do you feel that you often have a hard time paying attention or focusing on a single task? Number six, do you frequently or constantly check your email, Twitter, Facebook, or other online services? Are you constantly using? Number seven, do you find yourself reaching for your phone even when you're with others? Do you find yourself reaching for, or I'd even say, Beth, I'd even say glancing at your phone when you're with others? You're in a meeting, you're glancing at your phone. You're in a training session, you're glancing at your phone. You're with a donor, you're glancing at your phone. You're with your kids, you're glancing at your phone. You're at your kid's game, you're on your phone. Beth didn't say all this, I did. Her question is, do you find yourself reaching for your phone even when you're with others? Number eight. Number nine, do you sit at your computer at work or home for longer than 30 minutes at a time without getting up to take a break? Now remember I told you it was between 45 and 90? Beth is asking you about 30. Do you sit at your computer at work or at home for longer than 30 minutes at a time without getting up to take a break? Yes or no? Number 10, do you ever check your mobile phone while walking outside? Do you ever check your mobile phone while walking outside? There's actually a sign that's been created that said your Facebook post can wait. Look where you're walking. People run into things. So, again, I'm adding to Beth's question. Beth's question is, do you ever check your mobile phone while walking outside? So let me tell you, add up all the questions you answered yes to. The smaller your number, the more you are in charge of your social media work relationship. The larger your number, the more you are heading to an unsafe addiction. So 0 to 10, what's your number? The larger, the more dangerous. Okay? So my friends, I hope you found this helpful today. Until next time, invest in joy. Will you please never forget how I believe in you and the power you have to compose a good world? Please never forget that I care about you. Yeah, I want you to be great fundraisers, and I want you to work in this profession for a long time, but I also want you to be healthy and happy. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker, and this has been the Artful Asking Success Club. Dial down the drama, dial up your success. Thanks for being with me. Bye-bye now.